Welcome to the SEO Podcast, Unknown Secrets of Internet Marketing. My name is Chris Burris, one of the owners of EWR Digital.
And my name is Matt Bertram, your SEO strategist.
The SEO strategist. So you're in a different location there, Matt. You have a staircase. Is that a real staircase or is that a green screen staircase?
Real staircase. Let me see if I can turn my computer because we had light coming in before, right? So yeah. I guess this is kind of set. Yeah. But yeah, I'm in Rio Dos, New Mexico. Just ask me that.
That was before the podcast. This is during the podcast. So it's good. Like you're taking advantage of COVID and everybody's comfortableness. In the past, we probably wouldn't have done this. Like I think we did one remote podcast before COVID, and then like they've all been remote since.
Yeah, I know. We were doing a lot of them in person, right? And now most of them have been remote. And I'm just really taking advantage of it because, you know, phone, computer, anywhere in the world, I think that's one of the real draws to this industry. So I'm taking advantage of that. Like I've been kind of a couple different places and kind of come back to Houston for a few meetings here and there, but things are good.
So very cool. Well, please remember, we are broadcasting live from Houston, Texas, and Matt and I, we are your results rebels.
Hang ten.
Is that it? Is that good?
I don't know why
you're
calling. Oh, not that one.
Chris. Okay, not that one.
I guess, right?
I don't know. I can do this one. Go Cougs.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, go Cougs.
Now, look into who created sign language. It's pretty interesting. Let's just not go there.
Like I'll look that up because now I'm actually really interested. we are your results rebels. We're actually going to jump into the article. The article is 7 tips to improve your core web vitals, scores, and page experience signals. That's a mouthful. That's a lot.
That's kind of technical. I like it.
Before we do that, just remember this next podcast, you do not want to miss.
Yes.
At all. You don't want to miss because we're going to have the chief of sunshine and happiness.
At Google.
At Google. Right? Yeah. So a place that can dole out stuff. And he's doling out sunshine and happiness. I even have a special t-shirt for that broadcast. He's going to join us on the next one. We're really excited about that. He is joining the best SEO podcast. He's a webmaster.
Say his name? Or were you afraid to say his name?
It's Gary Ehrlich.
Yes.
Something along those lines. And you've been preparing some words, so I'm excited about that too.
I was on a call today with somebody and there's some Romanian words. So I know hello and I know thank you in Romanian. And the guy was trying to teach me some bad words. I go, I don't want to learn any bad words.
and hopefully he didn't.
No. And then in my head, I don't want to, they accidentally come out. So we want to stay in sunshine and happiness.
Absolutely. And maybe that's a good phrase. Call him back and say, how do you say sunshine and happiness?
I could. Me and him bonded over an hour of chatting. Like when people are working from home, they're a little, you know, like they're a little like more relaxed. Like they're not like they, you know, talk, share stuff. Like it was good.
I think that's good. All right. So we're going to jump into this article. This is by Rachel Costello. She is a VIP contributor. Search Engine Journal is where it was posted. In 2021, Google will be updating its algorithm to incorporate page experience as a ranking signal. By the way, page experience has already been a ranking.
They might be adding more stuff in, but I'm positive that it's already included and they're looking at certain things. The way we look at things or way people rank things, Gary says, you know, these are kind of simplifications of how the algorithm works.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if you really want to know the algorithm, you just go look at the patent and you just read the patent. That's what we do.
You read the patent or you come listen to our next podcast so we can learn it straight from the sunshine's mouth.
There you go.
Luckily, Google has announced the different elements that will feed the determining of overall page experience. And let's go over those right now because I think there's 4 of them. That's 4, you could call it 5. Core Web Vitals, right? So the largest contentful paint, the first input delay and cumulative layer shift.
Can you unpack that?
Well, luckily, Rachel has unpacked it for us. These measure the visual loading, interactivity, and visual stability of a page as it loads for users. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Next is mobile friendliness, right? So readability of content, whether links and on-page elements are clickable and accessible. Hopefully you've dealt with that already. So that's something that you're just like, okay, check, we've got that one. Next one, same thing, safe browsing. This is malware, phishing, hacked content. What to do about that? And really, there's only one thing to do about that. Get rid of it and lock your site down. And then next, HTTPS, right? So do you have an SSL associated with it? Are you encrypted? And Google has required that. I mean, I still bump into sites every now and then. I don't know about you, Matt, but in general, I don't find sites that don't have that aren't, you know, full on HTTPS.
It's interesting. I actually do find a lot of sites that have it. There's a lot of kind of news content sites out there. There's a lot of older sites that haven't really been touched, that haven't been updated. It's quite interesting. I mean, but I do think that there's a, you know, there's a little bit of a bump that you get, or there used to be, but most people have that now. But that's how you can like find out if people are staying in with the times, or it's a commercial site, that HTTPS, you should be looking for that. But what I do find too is when sites come in, sometimes, you know, some of the pages are HTTPS and some of them are just HTTP, and just kind of how you set up like the four different redirects, right? So like I definitely see it.
Yeah.
I shouldn't see it, but I do. Yeah.
And I was on a site the other day that actually came up non-HTTPS, and I just did a spot check. I was like, oh, I wonder if they actually have an SSL certificate for this. When I added the S, right, to HTTPS, the site worked fine. And so they just weren't, you were talking about those redirects, they just weren't forcing the utilization of the HTTPS. So yeah, it happens. It just, you know, hopefully it stopped happening.
It didn't happen as much as it does. Yeah.
And the next important thing is non-intrusive interstitials, right? This ensures that crucial on-page content is not obstructed for users as they're browsing. And Rachel's gone ahead and put together 7 tips so we can address these things. These covers areas such as fast and smoother visual loading, improved mobile usability, and enhanced website security. The first one of the 7 is preload key resources to speed up visual load times. So I'm going to say that again, because I feel like it may be even slower.
Could I say lazy loading? Would that be correct?
You got to be careful about lazy loading. That would be the negative piece of it, right?
Yeah.
Preload key resources to speed up visual load times. And you might be wondering, like, how in the world would I find my visual load times? So this is one of the first indicators for a user that a page is loading is the appearance of the above the fold content, right? So that content that you see right away. And they're talking about largest contentful paint. They call it LCP. Thank you. So I don't have to say largest contentful paint very often. And the first Core Web Vitals metric comes in to measure how quickly the main on-page elements load. Here's how you do it. To identify what a page's LCP element is to simply inspect the page in Chrome DevTools and it will be shown in the waterfall under the Performance tab. So if you're in Chrome, you actually right click. I did this to a couple of websites that we're in charge of. If you right click and you go to inspect, and you'll get a screen. It usually comes in on the side. I always change mine to the bottom just because I like it and whatever. I know how to change it. If you don't know how to change it, you're probably stuck with it at the side. And one of the tabs is performance. And under performance, you can actually make sure you've checked the screenshots. And there's a couple of buttons where you can record and you can start profiling a page. Yes.
I need to know how to move that to the bottom. I would just want to know how to do that. I might not do it, but I really want to know that pro tip there.
If you go in, so when you have it over on the side,
Yeah.
There's a gear and there is the three dots.
Yeah.
Under the three dots, it tells you dock side. So you can actually dock it separately. You can actually have it separately and put it on the screen next to you if you got multiple monitors. You can dock it on the left, dock it on the bottom, or dock it on the right.
Is that in settings and appearance?
Well, no, under the three dots. So as soon as you do first right click and then go to inspect.
Oh, inspect. Okay, we're in inspect. Got it. Okay. In
that, and then in the inspect window, there's three dots.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
And then you got the dock side. So that allows you. And like I said, I always like mine on the bottom. You can get a lot of real estate there. And then there's, once you go to the performance tab, so not the lighthouse tab, we've been using the lighthouse tab here and there.
Yeah.
Go to performance, make sure screenshots is selected. And then what's going to happen is it's going to take screenshots as time goes by and you'll have this waterfall, and you're actually able to hover over the waterfall and see what your screenshot looks like at that time. Right. So one of the sites that I'm looking at, it looks like it's at about, let's see.
Oh, I've got to be in that time. Some of these sites are pretty long. You don't really notice it. But Google does.
In my case, it's like within half a second, I've got the top screen. But what's interesting is that top screen kind of goes away because it's the scroll image across the top. So it actually kind of resets. So that's something that I need to look at on that particular site.
Yeah, no, I mean, we do a lot of speed optimization, server backend optimization, amping pages. There's a lot of things that you can do to speed things up, but server recall is probably one of the most important things because it's going back and forth to the server so many times. If you can, think about like what needs to load first or is most important or loads faster, because there's certain things that take a long time to load sometimes, like hero image videos and things of that nature. So there's a lot that goes into this, and you really need to know what's going on the back end with all this to figure out how to fix it on the front end. So
yeah, there's a lot of technical parts. And in fact, when we first were looking at this article, it's like, this is going to be really technical. And it's a little technical. It's kind of cool to get into waterfall stuff. I really do enjoy that kind of
thing. It was funny. We're like, oh man, this might be too technical to talk about. And then I was reading through, I was like, man, I think this is like some stuff that needs to be standard for a lot of people. So
Yeah, absolutely. To help speed up. So let's say you're looking at that waterfall, right? You're hovering, you're saying, wow, I'm a couple seconds in and I can't see anything yet. What you can do is you can actually preload items into you can actually tell the browser to preload things. And there's really, you just define it. You can Google that to find it. Hey, preload, how to preload items on an HTML page. That's the ultimate version, the end version that ends up on the browser. But that'll help. And you want to make sure, again, what you're trying to do is show the user something as quickly as possible so that they know something has happened. Because we've all like clicked a link and then a second, maybe a second and a half later, we're like, nothing happened. Even if something's about to happen, it's too late. Like, we're gone. We've just moved on. So you want to make sure you take care of that. Next is optimize main thread activity by minimizing long tasks. Right. So when they're talking about main thread activity, that's the process of actually downloading the website from the server and getting it to display. And it's talking about minimizing long tasks. And I went in and looked at this. We've looked at this before. When you're looking at the waterfall, you can actually, there are tasks that have a little red icon on them. Most of our listeners are podcast listeners, most of our people who take our content, those on YouTube and Facebook, we really could have prepared something here, but it's all right. You can figure it out. Again, right click, inspect, go to performance, and then click the record button over on the left of the inspection screen. And then when you do that, there's little red triangles that show you long tasks.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to identify those long tasks. And what's happening is those tasks take longer and nothing else can happen past that task until that task is done. So you want to identify those. Essentially, these are pieces of Java code that block the main thread for a long period of time. Long tasks in the Chrome Dev Tool, again, can be found at the top of the waterfall chart under the main tab and are highlighted with a red triangle. So those are the ones that Google's saying, hey, you probably should look at these.
And you'll see it. It'll say like total time or and you'll see how the length of it. It's pretty visually self-explanatory if you're listening to this and not watching. So.
Yeah, when you go and check this out on your website, you'll be able to find that. And then you can find more details on it by you click the long task and then you go into the bottom up tab. So this is kind of two layers in this console. And when you click the task at the bottom, there's a bottom up and that'll tell you the specific task that's taking long.
And there's things like, like if a video is taking a long time to load or image taking a long time to load, really Google's like new image formats and so that can be compressed more.
Yeah.
That's one of the big things, right? Is like people might be uploading videos directly to the website. So it takes a long time to load. Or some of these images are not compressed properly, or they're a different format, right? That takes longer to load, or the bigger image. And so there's things that you can do like that. And you want to see kind of what JavaScript's running. There might be some stuff you can clean up. There might be some movement, right, of different elements on the page that are taking longer than others that you might want to pull out. It's just good to know kind of really granularly everything that's going on the page to make it happen. And it's pretty magical, honestly, to know all these different things go on to make a website work. And as you kind of dig into those things, that's where you can kind of technically optimize load times. So.
Yeah. And one of their suggestions is like, hey, maybe you've got a longer piece of Java code. You could break that into pieces. But you just got to be real careful because every time you break Java code into pieces, it takes another server hit to get that other piece of Java code. This is like a classic engineering problem of what's the trade-off? Where's the value? We got to get something in front of the user as quickly as possible. But then we also don't want to slow down the overall load time by loading little tiny bits of Java continuously.
Load above the fold. Load everything above the fold.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Load it above the fold and then let the rest kind of fall out after that, or water fall out. How about that? Mm-hmm. Number three, reserve space for images and embeds to load. So this is called cumulative layout shift, CLS. It looks at the amount that the visual layout of a page moves around as the page loads. Now, really, this is a measurement of the frustration. Have you ever pulled up a web page and you're like, oh, this is the button I want to click. And as you go to click it, the page shifts and you end up clicking something else.
That ever happened? I've done that recently, but it used to be a problem. Yeah.
Right. It's less of a problem now, but you want to make sure. So that's basically as the page is shifting around, you've got to be careful. One example that Rachel gave is that, some people have this accept cookies button or banner. If the banner's at the top and you just load the page first and then the banner gets added and you haven't reserved space for the banner, that's going to shift the whole web page down by the height of that banner. And that's going to move that button. So you could accidentally press, back or close or cancel after you've, gotten something started. That's what this is to keep an eye on. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to do this. And you want to make sure that you're mindful of that shifting that's happening.
Yeah.
Because that is what's called a bad experience. Number four, make sure key page templates are mobile friendly. We're not going to dwell on this too much. Hopefully you've already taken care of this. I think even in the cases we were discussing earlier, where the HTTPS was not necessarily in place properly, or the forwards weren't, those pages were still mobile friendly. I don't know. I haven't seen a mobile unfriendly site in quite some time.
Some of these portals, like if you have a portal out there, you need to look at that because some of them don't have a mobile site. And like, I'll give you a quick example, like a signing proposal documents, right? Think about that. Like a lot of people send proposals in PDFs. I think within the first, I don't remember the data points, honestly, but it was like in the first couple minutes, 75% of people usually look at a proposal. Like, and so imagine sending a proposal that's not mobile friendly that you got to like, you know, open up
and zoom in. Yeah.
And then there's like a lot of websites that you log into the back end of the portal and it's not mobile friendly. And then you got to like, you know, like it's horrible. So, So, I mean, I think eventually everything will be updated. And also when you're building websites, you probably want to, mock up the mobile site first and make sure if you're using, because you're not building two different sites anymore. There's not the M dot sites, not too many of them out there. You got to look at dynamically what's happening, and you got to really consider that when you're building these sites, because on desktop it could look way different on mobile.
So. Yep. One thing she recommends, use the mobile usability report in Google Search Console. The report will flag issues such as content not fitting the screen, text being too small, showing you a list of affected URLs for each of those issues. So just if you haven't done that, get in that Search Console tool, Google Search Console, and make sure that you look at that report, because that's really important.
You know, one of the things I would add to that, just a quick little
tip,
I guess, is, you know, all these buttons are mostly like not big enough. Like you need to probably make all buttons about 25% bigger, because they need to be easily clickable. And I think that kind of plays into user experience. It's just something I see across the board is, I guess, the standard size for buttons. Like when you're building a website on mobile, they're just too small. So
Yeah. So again, like design with mobile in mind.
Yeah.
All right, number four, audit your site for security issues. So obviously website security plays an important role. This is looking for, I don't know, if your website's been hacked. I don't know, if you've worked with enough WordPress websites, you've experienced the challenges that can happen, right? You've experienced some malware, some phishing, some hacked content, some maybe extra pages. There's lots of plugins that exist for WordPress that are focused on, one, fixing those types of issues, and then two, kind of trying to make sure that they don't happen again. In reality, most of those, at least in the WordPress space, are caused by just out-of-date WordPress installations, out-of-date plugins in those WordPress installations. And so make sure you take care of that. Normally, you'll get some sort of report. So whatever email, one, make sure your website is signed up and you're connected to Google Search Console. And when and if you get a hack, Google will email you and say, hey, your website's a challenge. Sometimes when you search for a website, that website listing in the SERP page, search engine result page, will show you like this has been attacked, right? So
yeah. So one of the other things, I know you're talking about plugins, like user permissions can be an issue, right? User permissions can be an issue. Also, allowing comments on a website can create issues.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways that people are messing with sites. You really want to be diligent about keeping everything up to date. Everything online, everything on WordPress is open source. So any plugins that you're using on your site, some coders were drawing that and giving you an update. It doesn't mean that the new code might not have a hole in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's actually been plugins that we've used personally. What is that one? It was like security. It was something fence. It was one of the top security plugins that like we basically were using standard. I forget the name of it. And then the update made a bunch of holes. So it was a security plugin that they did an update, and it was like one of the top security plugins, and it just created a bunch of holes, and we had to go switch out everything on a number of sites a while back. But I mean, you know, in an open source market, you never know. Like, I mean, what's your rule, Chris, right? You when we started working together, you always told me, like, looking at the plugins, if you don't know and you're trying to use plugin, also one, any plugin is creating more code, so it's going to slow down your site. So you really want to limit the amount of plugins you use. But when you do select a plugin, what was kind of your rule of thumb, Chris?
So I want to see at least 10,000 downloads in that particular plugin. And I also want to see that the last time they've done an update or the last time they've solved a problem or responded to a user who's had a question is really within 3 months, right? So like if as long as they have that kind of volume, 10,000 means that people are using it, hopefully, and that they're probably interacting. And then if they're interacting at least within the last 3 months, then you could say that that's an active plugin. And it's a good idea to go back and check and say, oh, this plugin that was active 9 months ago, now they haven't done anything in 6 months. Like, be mindful of that. There are, you know, holes are constantly being encountered, found, discovered, and utilized by hackers to get into your system and hack it. And there's a couple of things. Sometimes they'll hack it and create a ton of web pages. Sometimes they'll hack it and create a message on the front. And actually, sometimes that message only shows if you do a search for your website and click through from Google, because they know if I do a direct type of my domain name so that there's no referring URL, that it's probably the business owner looking at his own website, and so they don't show the hack. And then the other thing that it'll do is it'll fire out a ton of emails, right? It uses the email platform of your website, right? If your website has forms on it, it's sending out emails. If you're like us, you're doing it a very secure way. If you're like a lot of people in the WordPress environment, you're just letting WordPress and your server manage that. Well, once they can get in there, they can fire off thousands of emails. They can serve email spam, and that can have huge negative ramifications for your site and obviously your email.
That happens on Facebook and on social media accounts all the time. I mean, we actually had to develop a technical support plan, like a webmaster plan, that we have all the people we do marketing on that plan. And even there's a number of people that we're just hosting with that have that plan, because there's a lot of issues. Like, you got to have backups of your site. You know, like the thing that I've seen a lot of is the Viagra, like ads or whatever. And then a bunch of like Chinese, I don't even know what the Chinese says. All I know is Mihao. That's hello. Yeah. But
very friendly.
Yeah. But they change the meta descriptions and do a bunch of stuff. Like, they'll create a bunch of users. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that can happen. And like the crazy thing is, or the funny thing, not the funny, not the crazy. I don't know what it is.
Weird.
Like, you don't know. Like, it's all good until it happens, right? Like, so like, it's kind of like you need to have insurance on some of this stuff, and you need to have a backup of your website, because I've seen everything, and I've seen almost everything. I'm sure, like, there's probably stuff I haven't seen, but we deal with a lot of websites. We a lot of clients come on, they're very insecure, and we protect them. So
All right, so number six, make sure forms and embedded resources are served over HTTPS. So we've already kind of touched on this, but it's even this is more specific to forms, right? So sometimes if your form is maybe going to another site or another subdomain, you've got to be careful to make sure that it's in the code of the form that content, you want that content when the user's entering it, although this is not necessary, but it's better for the user experience that the form that they're on is SSL, has encryption on it. And then at a minimum, where that content gets sent has to be encrypted, has to be an HTTPS. So make sure you do that. We don't want to belabor that, just,
I will say, not specifically about that, is just BluePay, which we use BluePay.
Yeah.
When you're entering in, like when you create custom codes, like for people to pay, it is secure, but the little image up there, the icon's broken.
Yeah.
So like, there's been clients that are concerned about that. Like, it's very, like, you need to, if you're giving information or you're collecting information, security is something that absolutely everybody's taking into consideration right now. And you know, it should be probably a focus for sure. So
yeah, absolutely. All right. Finally, number seven. Thank you, Rachel. Patif to you. Ensure interstitials don't obstruct crucial content. Matt, what's an interstitial?
Is it like a banner ad that freaking pop? Like I'm telling you, like there's some news sites like Forbes. Like, come on. Like the user experience is so bad, and they just want to throw something up that covers the whole screen.
Yeah, well, isn't it sometimes on, especially it's pretty popular now on like these news sites where the site kind of loads and then the whole page pushes down for this ad and then you got to click to close it and the whole page comes back up. That's that they're going to, I believe they'll get dinged by this, this update that's looming.
Well, yeah, if you have pop-ups, like let's just call it a pop-up maybe, a pop-up, you know, if it loads immediately, Google doesn't like it. I have seen on a number of sites where they have like a page, it looks like a landing page basically, where they try to capture your information before you actually get into the site. That's becoming pretty popular. Yeah. You know, but you got to think about kind of user experience as well. And, you know, I it depends how you do it. Like I got to see, like Neil Patel does it a lot. I got to see how he does it. I don't know how his code is, but I just know pop-ups immediately popping up is an issue. And Google looks at that because it's a bad user experience. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we always say, as long as you're providing a good experience to the Google user, Google will look favorably upon you.
Well, you need to say that to Gary Alves.
We will. Oh, we will. Yeah. That's going to be my question. Actually, yeah, that's going to be one of my questions. Like, is that a true statement? How true is it? Is it possibly the truest thing you've ever heard about Google?
I like that. Like, let's see if we can get them to help us make the truest true statement. Like, okay. Really,
yeah,
I like that. I like that. Fun.
So just know, right? If you're cutting edge and you're doing these pop-ups, you probably already know, like, your interstitials are in the way. But if you don't know, if you're not sure, like, you just got to manually review it. Like, pull up your website and, like, hey. If I were a regular user and not a business owner who really wants them to fill out this form, would I be irritated by the fact that I have no choice but to fill out this form? Do that from a objective as possible perspective, and then you'll be able to understand if that's going to be something that you're going to get dinged for.
On mobile, especially.
Yes. Raleigh. Yeah, because what is mildly irritating on a desktop can be monumentally irritating on a mobile device. I mean, we've had situations where you got the cookies pop up and then you've got the chat pop up, and the chat popped up actually on mobile covered the cookies button. so there's no way.
Like a number of these things, like you can't get to the button. You're like, where's the button to like submit? Like, you know, so you gotta, I mean, from a design standpoint, you can't just throw these things up there like, man, why is my site not converting?
Yeah. Take the time and look. I have been on sites, but again, when you get more kind of technical, they're designed for workstations instead of mobile devices, and that's actually wrong. But I have been on some devices where I actually have to like turn my phone in landscape mode so that with the hope, it doesn't always work, but with the hope that that's going to get me to a place where I can see the button or do whatever I need to do next. So test that out. All right, Rachel Costello, 7 tips to improve your core web vitals scores and page experience signals. I think this was pretty good. And I'm excited. We're coming a little bit technical and going into a conversation with Gary, you know, the purveyor of sunshine and happiness. I think it's exciting. Make sure you guys tune into the next podcast.
Okay. So, I mean, Gary's one of the main people that work on the algorithm. He used to work on local, you know, we had to send him pre-prepared questions because like, he can't tell us the secret Google formula. But it should be definitely a good interview. So I encourage you to check it out. So,
yeah. All right. Well, as we're wrapping things up, we will ask you to do us a small favor. Go ahead and share the podcast with 3 people, because, you know, this is great information here. Also, we would like you to leave us a review. Did you make the link, Matt? Huh? Did you?
I assigned that task. I have not followed
it's
up. It's
probably done. Do you remember what it was? We can check it real quick.
Was it like just slash review or something? I don't, you asked me to do something silly with Google Plus or something, but I'm not sure. I mean, I did it, but
let me see. digital.com/review. It does look like that worked, actually.
Well, there you go. I don't know. I haven't checked it. Honestly, I just put it in as a task in our project management tool and left it alone.
Guess what? It's good to know that project management tool actually works, because it does work. All you need to do, if you could.
People kill people. Yeah. All right. Same thing goes for project management tools.
Isn't it just magic? I thought you just like type stuff in there and then magically, boom, it happens.
Sometimes for me, but yeah.
If you would be so kind, please leave us a review. Hopefully you will make that review 5 stars. Just go to ewrdigital.com/review, and that'll take you right to the screen so you can enter your review. Thank you guys so much. Anything to wrap things up, Matt?
No, I think this was solid. I like it.
Yeah, it was good. Thank you guys for tuning in. You guys have made us the most popular SEO podcast and one of the most popular internet marketing podcasts on the iTunes, the known universe of iTunes. Thank you. We really appreciate you. Patif to you guys. Until the next podcast, my name is Chris Burris.
My name is Matt Burchard.
Bye-bye for now.